This is Next Steps for Seniors with your host, Wendy Jones. Each week, Wendy brings resources and information to help guide you through those next steps for your elderly parent or loved one. Now, here's Wendy Jones with this week's guest.
Good morning and welcome to Next Steps for Seniors. This is where we discuss resources that are available to you to help you with your aging parents or loved ones. My name is Wendy Jones, and I'm your host, and I have two guests in studio today, and we are going to learn a wealth of knowledge from them. And a lot of times as we age, you know, we think about things like getting married, where we're going to go to college, you know, all these big life decisions, children, retirement, but there's sometimes as we age that we're not, you know, what we all don't want to talk about is what's going to happen if something happens to us as we get older. Let's say you can't get out of a chair anymore. Let's say you can't do the stairs anymore. Let's say you can't drive anymore. And I know nobody wants to talk about this stuff, but that's why we are here, because we want to talk about this stuff. And I hope if you're listening, you have a desire to want to know some things that you can be prepared for in the future. And the key is talking about it ahead of time. That is my big passion, and that is why I'm here, to share with our listeners things that we should be talking about now. And I just want to tell you, on our last program, somebody brought this up. I think it was Brian Kurtz was on. It's a financial guy. And he said, have the conversation with your family and with your loved ones at 40 and 70. How about that? So if the kids are 40, between 40 and 50, and the parents are 70, this is the time. This is the time to have the conversation. When I say that, I mean, sit down and really get to know, you know, mom and dad, as you age, what do you want to do? How do you want this to look? Let's talk about these things while you're healthy, sound mind. Let's have these conversations so that when they're 86 or 93, you're not having the conversation then. So that's my passion. I just shared it. There you go. Now you have it. So with me in studio, I'm going to introduce you to Mark Raymond. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning to you.
And Mark is a property manager with TMI Realty and his beautiful wife, Tricia. Hi, Tricia.
Hello.
Tricia Raymond, also a broker and owner with TMI Realty. And we're going to talk about, they've both owned rental homes in Southeast Michigan for years and managed them and are obviously in sales as well. And there's a lot of things happening in the market, but we want to get to know you two today. And we want to get to know how our listeners can learn from you and what you've done in your lifetime. So what backgrounds do each of you have that kind of uniquely lend yourselves to what you're doing in property management?
Well, good morning. And I just want to say thank you for having us on today. I really appreciate it. It's been a long time since we've been on the radio. The unique experiences that we bring to property management is that before we ever were managing for other people, we managed our own several properties for many years. We opened TMI as a brokerage in 2010, but prior to that, we had been landlords for many years. The way we actually first got into the business was by accident. Our first little house in downtown Royal Oak that we moved into when we got married in 1985 had a little, what they call, mother-in-law apartment in the basement. Mm-hmm. Called the Knotty Pine. It had a little kitchen. It had a full bathroom and a basement or a bedroom in the basement. You know, we'd only been there 6 months, and so we hadn't stuffed it full of junk yet.
Right.
And a friend of ours needed a place to stay. So we said, well, you want to stay in our basement for a while. So she moved in, and she was paying us $250 a month to live there.
And this is back in 1985, let's remember.
Yeah,
right.
And actually, you know, when we bought that house in downtown Royal Oak then was empty storefronts and pawn shops. It's not the Royal Oak it is now.
Mm.
And that house only cost $38,000, but the interest rate was 12.5%.
Wow.
For those who remember those days.
$38,000, I bet you wish you still have that house.
We do still have that house.
Oh, you lucky thing.
It's our favorite little house. We get like over $2 a square foot to rent it. It's great.
Tricia calls it her little gold mine.
It is. It's my gold mine house. So
we all want to make good decisions like that.
We lived there 7 years, and after she moved out, we said, you know, we could keep renting our basement. So we kept renting it for $400 for the next several years. In our basement, you know, we just got used to not having the basement.
Mm-hmm. Can't do that now, but back then you could.
Yeah. And then in 1992, we just decided we needed a, you know, bigger place. It was time to move. We moved to Troy, and then we just started renting a whole house. And then
so
several,
one person or two? Did you have one in the basement, one in the
No, you can't do that now.
Oh, you can't. Yeah. Okay, legally.
Yeah, it had. There was no basement egress, so at that point it just became a whole house rental. Anyway, then in 1998 my dad passed away, so I inherited my parents' house, and we turned that into a rental. Then in 2001 and 2, we bought a few more.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we took equity out of one property and bought three. So that's how we accumulated a few and did the rehab and filled them with tenants and continued to rent and get the landlord experience through all of these different properties over the years. And then I decided to get my real estate license because, you know, just to rent out.
You're already doing it, right?
Yeah, just to rent things out, you don't really need a license yet. But then when you start helping other people buy and sell, that's when you get licensed. So I was licensed since 2002 and then became a broker in 2010. At that point, we started renting for other people because of the fact that so many people we knew were coming to us and they were underwater and they couldn't sell and they needed to move. And they couldn't sell their house because they were so far underwater. And they were, like, begging us. They said, will you please rent our house out because we know that you know what you're doing.
And this wasn't in 2009 or it was?
Yeah.
We all lived through that.
Exactly. So right about in that time frame is when people were in trouble and they knew that they couldn't get rid of their house themselves and they were afraid to be their own landlord.
Right.
So that's what our practical experience is, that we were doing it for so long. And I also have a legal background, having worked for collection lawyers for many years, which gave me an understanding of contract law and the court system and how to deal with that. And thankfully, we've had very, very few people we've ever had to deal with in that way because we just do a good selection process. So anyway, our background is the fact that we did it ourselves for many years successfully.
Right. And why reinvent the wheel? People who are listening to the program right now are thinking, why should I try to rent my house? Why wouldn't I just call you and have you do it for me? And I don't think that people really were as open to it as they are now, don't you think?
Correct.
So, Mark, it's your turn.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I just wanted to add, first of all, that some people collect baseball cards. My wife collects houses. And I jokingly sometimes introduce her as the good little housekeeper because she owns and kept every house she ever lived in. So, little sidebar. But my background is going on from when we met in radio, was actually producing large-scale shows that travel the country.
Did everybody hear they met in radio? I just want to bring that to our listeners' attention. So yeah, we got two radio personalities in the
college
house.
Radio station, yeah.
That's
so
fun.
Learned project management, and I kind of have a personality that lends itself towards being a systems checklist kind of a guy.
Right.
The background that I bring to property management. It's a very systems-oriented approach.
And you need a structure. I mean, there's no doubt because, yeah. I mean, everybody knows I don't even want to do the repairs on my own house, not alone somebody else's house.
Right. So project management principles applied to property management. And I view these homes that we manage as projects, so we have good systems for all of the things that hopefully we'll be able to share with the audience.
So why is it that you think that there's an emerging trend with families that are more successful in leasing out homes?
Well, as we know, there's the aging population. We're following the baby boomers.
Mm-hmm.
So Mark's mother actually is 93, and she just went into assisted living after living in an apartment for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she hit her head in January and finally was at the point that she wouldn't be able to live on her own anymore. Now, we didn't have a house for her to sell since she had been renting. We'd always joked, all the kids in the family, we'd tried to buy a house for her many times to let her live in it, and she always refused because she just was comfortable where she was.
Oh, okay.
So now she is in a very nice assisted living center over in Sterling Heights, and so we're meeting all the folks over in that place, over in Shorehaven, and so getting to know the situations with many of the people that are there. And some of them still actually have a house.
And it could be sitting there vacant.
Right, exactly.
And so then that's generating income. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of these homes are paid for, right?
Correct.
And they're sitting there, and why not get some rental revenue from it?
Correct. And if you think about, if you ask anybody about the cost of assisted living, they're going to generally say it's anywhere from about $3,500 to $7,000 a month.
Yep, this is what I do for a living. I know, right? Just so our listeners know, any independent living, which is completely different than assisted, is around $2,800 to $3,200 a month. And then assisted living is closer to $5,000 a month. And then you've got memory care at about $8,000. So there is, you know, there is a huge disparity, and that's a lot of money to pull in every
Absolutely.
Single month to pay for.
But Social Security's not paying all that.
Nope. It absolutely is not. So I love what you guys have come up with, this idea of managing properties and going in and just being able to give them another source of revenue, really, especially for people that have their own homes and they're paid for.
Keeping the wealth in the family, because you can always sell it, and it may make more sense to offset the costs of with the rental.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. I love it. So share your phone number if they want to get a hold of you real quick for me.
Certainly, 248-658-8518.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking further with our guests from TMI Realty, Mark and Tricia Raymond. This is Wendy Jones, and you're listening to The Patriot, FM 101.5, AM 1400. Welcome back to Next Steps for Seniors. We're here today with Tricia Raymond and Mark Raymond, both property owners and brokers for TMI Realty. And we're talking about different options with your home. And I think it's a fascinating topic because many people don't always look at all the different angles and different ways that you can create revenue for yourselves. And they have thought of an angle that I think is very smart of a way that you can create revenue. So let's talk about the rationale of transforming a primary residence into a rental home rather than just selling it.
And I'll speak to that because I do sell homes as well. I sell quite a few homes each year and rent quite a few. So I'm always looking at the sales price and the rental price. When anybody is inquiring, they always have to make a decision. Should I sell it or should I rent it? So we're always doing a valuation either way, a current valuation of what would the home sell or rent as is without doing anything or fixed up, what would you need to do to fix it up? How many things do you need to do? How much money do you have to put into it to make it livable and attractive for somebody to rent it or to buy it? So we're always doing that expert valuation to make that determination for the family either way. And obviously the reason to do it for rent is to offset the cost of assisted living. So we're just talking about the cost, $3,000 to $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a month. And if the rental amount can net that person anywhere from, say, at least $500 or $600 to $1,500 or $2,000 a month, somewhere in that range, that's going to offset that amount. Social Security, they might be getting, who knows, $900, $1,000, $1,500. People get different amounts of Social Security to go toward that as well, or disability amounts, but those don't even pay for the whole place. So if you have a house that is free and clear, chances are you're going to be able to make a decent amount of cash flow. And let's just say the house is worth $150,000. Yes, you could sell the house, and then you could take the net proceeds and put them in a bank account, and you could draw off those funds for months or years. But in these days, we don't really know how long we're going to be living. In fact, you know, most of us, the financial planners are telling us, you know, now that we have to plan to live much longer than we used to. Obviously, Social Security, we think about that running out as well. And so if you just sell the house, you've got a lump sum, but when it's gone, it's gone. You can sell the house anytime, but if you don't have the revenue coming in, then at some point that money's going to stop.
Well, and what's interesting too, as you're talking, I'm thinking about this. If I had $150,000 in my bank, right, what would you do? You'd probably be like, oh, I have $150,000. Let's spend it. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have it right there in a lump sum, you're more likely to go through that money a little quicker on other things, right? Instead of actually say, it's almost like a forced savings when you have it coming in on like a monthly check from rental income. Mm-hmm. Then you can't spend it.
Let's just say that you're netting $1,000 off it a month. And so that's $12,000 a year that's going toward the assisted living. How long does it take before $12,000 a year runs out and you're still alive?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like every other piece of financial income in your life that you're planning on receiving. You have to figure out how long it's going to last you.
So let me ask you this, Mark. When it comes to pricing out a rental home, and you've done this for years, so I'm assuming you can share this, but if you can't, tell me. But do you do it by square footage? Like, let's say someone has a 2,000 square foot home. Like, how much could they get for that? I mean, does it go by property value, location, what type of home? What are the factors you look at when coming up with a rental income?
So I appreciate you asking me this question, but I need to defer to the expert to my right.
Oh, okay.
And the reason why that is, let me just say something, because I want to build Trish up a little bit here. So Tricia is, in addition to being the broker owner of TMI Properties, she also was very involved in the bank foreclosure, the bank meltdown, the financial meltdown the country had with mortgages. And in order to continue to receive assignments from the banks, from the asset managers of the banks, she has to be very, very accurate in terms of valuation. So you literally can take the valuations that Tricia provides. And she forgot more about real estate in this regard than I know. So I would defer that question to her. If in terms of valuation of a property, mm-hmm. she's excellent.
Well, thank you so much.
That's a good husband.
Yeah, yeah. Good husband. Thank you, honey. But yes, valuing the property, like I was saying earlier, whether it's for rent or for sale, it is a little bit of a science, but it's a numbers crunching game. And just like you hire a realtor to come in and look at your property, look at the condition, and then look at the comparable homes in the area. Just like an appraiser, we're always doing the job of an appraiser before the appraiser comes mm-hmm. when we're selling. So we're always having to look at the property, look at things within basically the square mile, if we can. Now, when it's a rental, you go farther than that. But you still have to take into account the city, the school district, the general similar area that your home belongs in. And then you're finding comparable homes that have sold or, in this case, leased in the last at least 6 months. You're looking at the most recent sales or leased homes. And yes, you're looking at things that are similar, three bedrooms, one bath, two baths. Does it have a basement? Does it not? Does it have a garage? So you're assigning value to all these things, and you're finding similar homes in similar conditions. So if I find a 1,500-square-foot house in Troy that has a basement, has a two-car garage, and one is completely updated with granite, and it's had all the
new kitchen,
everything done to it,
right.
And let's
hardwood
say
hardwood floors,
and it's selling for $2,200. But then you come along, Wendy, and you say, "Well, here's my house, and my grandma just moved out of it, and so it's like very well maintained, and
right.
it could be move-in ready, but it's old decor. It's from mm-hmm. the '70s or the '80s, or mm-hmm. it's even older than that. That might only fetch $1,700. There might be a $300-$500 difference between just decor,
right."
So we're always looking at similar homes. We try to find the most similar home. And then also, because the market is so hot right now, sometimes people don't really care about the decor. They're so anxious to get something
mm-hmm.
that they're willing to pay more right now. So the rental market is commanding high prices right now.
So a couple questions. One is this a good time, like season-wise? Like people, I'm assuming, want to get in before school starts. So like in my head, I'm thinking September is probably slower than July and August. But you tell me, what's mm-hmm. the market like?
Well, and I would say before the market meltdown and before the market got good again recently, it was much more seasonal, both sales and leasing. However, in the past 4 or 5 years, the market is so tight and there's hardly anything on the market. Like in the sales market, we say the inventory right now is only a 2 to 3 month inventory.
Really?
Yeah. Now, if you go back to 2009, 10, 11, we had an 18-month inventory of homes on the market. 18 months, which means it would take 18 months to sell everything that was on the market.
And what year was that, 2011?
9, 10, 11.
Yeah.
That was what it was.
That was a rough time, though, for everybody.
And basically, it took between 9 and 11, it took 2 years to sell off mm-hmm. an excess year of inventory. And at that point in 2011 to 12, we finally got down to a 6-month inventory. And at 6 months inventory is when builders can finally start selling new homes again.
Got it.
And you noticed all the builders had gone bankrupt before then because they mm-hmm. couldn't sell. So then you saw things starting being built in 12, 13, 14, and all the pricier areas they've been building since mm-hmm. then because they can sell because the inventory of used homes is so low. Likewise, the inventory of rentals is very low. And one of the biggest reasons, it's interesting that when we put a home on the market, we start getting so many leads right away. And half the people who call, the reason they're moving is only because the person that owns the home they're in is selling it, and they have to leave just because that person is selling. They were underwater, they didn't want to be a landlord, and now they can make money and walk away, and they're booting their renter out, and now we get them.
Hmm.
So that's why the rental market is also so tight right now, is because these people are selling off their houses and taking their profits finally, and there's hardly anywhere for them to find to rent. So we're commanding high rent prices just about everywhere, and we have zillions of leads that come
in. Was your example in Troy fairly accurate, like 2,200?
Sure.
For a newly furnished?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. you said 2,000-square-foot home?
Yeah.
With the attached garage?
It could even go a little bit higher.
Yeah.
If it was all updated.
Right. And it's worth a call. Definitely give them a call. What's your number again, Mark?
It's 248-658. 8518.
Why not rent? Why not? That's what I want to get into in the next step. Because in my mind, if you have a home, especially if it's paid for and you need to move into a community, why not rent? And we're going to cover that in our next segment. Because the real reasons, what? Because you don't want to manage it, right? Exactly. I don't want to have to fix the things. You're listening to WDTK, FM 101.5, AM 1400, The Patriot. We'll be back right after this commercial. This is Wendy Jones, and you're listening to The Patriot, FM 101.5, AM 1400. We're here today with Tricia and Mark Raymond from TMI Realty, kind of talking about the differences between leasing and selling and the advantages and disadvantages. And just before we went to break, I was saying, why not rent?
Well, I think a lot of people have fear. There's horror stories out there, some grounded in truth and some of them a little bit unfounded. Some people say, oh, they're going to trash my house. Well, first of all, let's talk about the individual that's taking care of mom or dad. Their focus is on their loved one, and it's not going to be on a rental house. So it makes real good sense to hire somebody that's done this a long time and is professional. And one of the things that we do is we inspect the house on a regular basis. Safety inspections in the spring and the fall, checking smoke detectors, checking carbon monoxide, making sure the furnace is certified for no carbon monoxide emissions.
Being proactive. Being
very
proactive.
Very, mm-hmm. That is something that we do. We're very checklist-oriented, very systems-oriented, and very proactive in these properties. Interestingly enough, the thing that's neglected the most with a rental property is the landscape and the curb appeal of the property. And that's oftentimes why the neighbor will say, oh no,
it's a rental
house going next door.
It's a rental.
And one of the things that I do when I go into...
I do that with cars. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I go into the neighborhood and I meet the neighbors and I hand them my business card and say, this is going to become a rental home. And I don't want you to be concerned. If there's an issue of any sort, call me. So proactivity. And just a real quick sidebar, this goes back to something that is in my background. My father was a designer for General Motors, and he taught me about pruning, maintenance of foundation plantings in the Japanese bonsai style. So when I'm stopping by a property, I'll be actually addressing some of the foundation plantings just as a value added. We keep that curb appeal up real nice on the property. And we coordinate the maintenance for them. We have properly vetted vendors relationships. There's like 350 vendors in my phone right now that we have their insurance, their licensure if necessary.
So these are people that would go out and take care of the lawn and that type of stuff? Or
correct. We can coordinate all of the maintenance from the roof to the foundation. And we have all these vendor relationships. Having been in the business for so many years, we have real good vendors that get it from a rental standpoint.
So it's the renter's responsibility, though, to pay for that. Like if there's upkeep on the outside, like what's the differentiation between those two things?
So we have in our lease baseline language in a lease, and then there's customization and adaptation for unique circumstances. We have a contractor that can do lawn care if the tenant is either unable to or for whatever reason, and obviously then the resident will be paying for that service. There are instances where the owner may choose to just provide snow removal and lawn care as a part of the rental package and raise the rent commensurately to cover those things too. Each house has a different approach, and so it depends on a lot of factors that go into it, how we structure it.
Yeah, that is interesting because, I mean, obviously there's certain things like a light bulb. You're not going to send someone out there to change a light bulb. That's the responsibility of the renter.
It is. And at the end of the lease, we're relamping the whole house to get it ready for a resident turnover. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's things like the security deposit that come into play for things that they didn't do.
What is the security deposit usually, the first month's rent?
A month and a half is the legal limit. This may change. There's been talk about raising it to 2 months of the rental income. But as of right now, a month and a half is the maximum Michigan law provides for holding in an account.
Mm-hmm. However, we also charge a minimum $250 cleaning fee that we take at the beginning. And that way we have at least a $250 just to send house cleaners in at the end, to, even though they have, you know, somewhat cleaned or broom cleaned.
Right, we still want
it cleaned well before someone else moves in.
Well, back to the fears, one of the other things I was thinking of is, what if they don't pay their rent? Like, if I'm the owner, I'm like, what do I do?
So Tricia talked a little bit about that in the beginning, that she has actually a background in collections. Now, she's not an attorney, and she's not a licensed collector. But, obviously, we do have to collect rent, and we do remit those payments to the owners. And we have a system in place for that. I'm going to let Tricia talk to that. But I just want to say that she had a front row seat at one of the larger commercial collections firms in Southeast Michigan for many years. And so she learned quite a bit. Tricia, you can just take that from there.
Well, I think the fear, though, like you say, there's two big fears in renting. They're going to trash my house, and what if they don't pay? Because those are the things that affect you the most. And obviously, we're here talking about the fact that we want income to offset assisted living. So we don't want to have that income all of a sudden stopped when you're depending on it. A little bit of a difference between someone going into this wanting to be an investor for the long run. They expect some things to bounce once in a while up and down with vacancy. But we're sticklers for not having vacancies, having quick turnovers without having interruption, so that cash flow can continue, and that is our objective. So if somebody doesn't pay, then you have to follow the court process quickly in order to move them out as soon as possible. In 25 years, we've been in court probably not more than 5, 6, 7 times. So that's not much compared to the hundreds of leases that we've done over the years, and we've never had a sheriff eviction. So you may hear, you know, nightmare stories about property management firms having to boot people out all the time. It does depend on the neighborhood, the price of the place. There's a lot of factors going into why leases don't go through. But primarily, I see that it's letting the wrong person in the house. And so the fear about becoming your own landlord too quickly when you've never done this in your entire life is that you're going to be too soft on whoever's in the house.
Oh, everybody's too soft.
And, you know, first rule is don't rent to friends and family, because they're the first ones that are going to expect you to let them have a break if something goes wrong in their life.
So how do you vet people that are going to be renting?
We use a fair housing compliant financial screening process. That's quite rigorous, actually. First of all, we want to make sure that the applicant is financially viable and appropriate for the home that they're considering. So we get the application in, and these fair housing laws, they must be followed in the application process consistently, and we do. So one of the things that Tricia talks about is not just checking a credit score, because we hear a lot of that is like, we have a threshold of, we only want this credit score, and that's it. And we say, well, wait. What about consideration as to what contributed to that rental score? Because you may have a situation where there was a catastrophic medical in their past. Mm-hmm. You may have a situation where they went through that market meltdown we talked about earlier, and now they have a great job and they're doing just fine. But if they have a credit score that's lowered because they're not paying the cable bill and the electric bill and the phone bills and things like that, those are more like red flags, and we would look at that kind of a situation. So that's the kind of financial screening that we do. Obviously, employment is verified. We do the employment checks, the previous landlord checks, prior evictions, criminal history nationwide. Those things can be done. We actually have a program that goes out through the credit bureaus, and it's a part of our process where we can literally receive the application, click a button, they pay a small fee, and all of this information comes very, very quickly.
Well, and I like that, because how would the average person who's renting ever get a criminal check on somebody?
They would need these systems that, you know, go out and scour the entire United States for the sex offender registry. It even tells us if they're on the terrorist watch list.
I love it. No, but it's important. Yeah. We need to be smart.
Mm-hmm. Like, and enough
of the, I didn't know.
Right. And most, the average person who just starts doing this and they don't have the resources, then they're even embarrassed to ask somebody for it. Whereas we've been doing this, landlords get a little rocky after a while because you get used to hearing people's lies or excuses. And so you do have to play the bad cop with some tenants who try to take advantage, or an applicant who's trying to get into your home who has no business being there and they're trying to hide something in their past. So you do have to really screen people and not be ashamed of screening them the right way.
I had a resident apply that declared that they were a registered nurse at a major local area hospital. It turns out that they were not.
Because we checked the licensing with the state of Michigan and found out they were not licensed a nurse. So they were lying.
But did they work at that hospital?
No.
Okay, good. Yeah. I was like, I hope they weren't at a hospital. So what I really appreciate about what you are doing is you're able to really substantially assist people who need to pay for assisted living and they have a house that's covered.
That's right.
Most people that move into assisted living, the average age, I want to say, is 86. And with that being said, a lot of 86-year-olds, houses are paid for or really, really, really close. And when you're in that situation, why not get some revenue from it? And then you can pass it on to your kids and let them continue that legacy.
The wealth stays in the family this way.
It stays in the family, and you're helping out another family that may not be able to afford to buy their own house. So it's a win-win all the way around. You're listening to WDTK, FM 101.5, AM 1400, The Patriot. And we'll be back in just a moment to talk more with Tricia and Mark Raymond from TMI Realty. This is Wendy Jones, and you're listening to The Patriot, FM 101.5, AM 1400. Welcome back to Next Steps for Seniors. Today we're talking about rental properties, truly, and the benefits to renting versus selling. And there's obviously many things you can do to generate income. But nowadays, I feel like, you know, and you guys tell me, but I feel like we spend money so easily that you might be better off renting in many situations versus selling, because then the money's coming in on a regular basis. The other thing I like is, just to throw this out there, whoever moves into your home, they're covering all your costs. They're mowing your grass. Like, they're taking care. Upkeep is a huge, huge challenge. Mm-hmm. And if you can get all your basic costs covered, plus make some money on it, why wouldn't you rent, right?
Absolutely.
So talk us through, Mark, the process of what happens. So if one of our listeners call you today, later on this afternoon, walk us through that process of what that looks like.
So one of the first things that we like to do, and by the way, it's Mark and Tricia, and we are the owners, and we're the ones that they would be dealing with. We don't have a huge firm where there's lots of different employees. Very friendly, focused service, and it starts with usually an interview either at the home, in their home, or over coffee somewhere, where they have the opportunity to pick our brain a little bit, just kind of like you're doing here today. And we like to let it unfold how our philosophy of property management shows forth, so that they come away with the good feeling that we're going to take care of the home for them, which we will.
Is that assessment free that you sit down with
absolutely.
Them? No charge, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And we like that, where they ask us questions, and we do at the end start to ask them some questions, because we want to find out what their philosophies are with regard to property management, how they're going to approach maintenance, things like that. People have differing opinions that, you know, maybe I can kick the can down the road on this thing and not the other. And I want to segue this into, many municipalities require a rental registration license. And in order to get that, you're going to need to have the property brought to minimum safety standards according to the building codes. The city inspectors get a lot of pushback from people, like, why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do that? And we always try to remind them in a friendly way, this is minimum safety standards. At the end of the day, the resident wants to come home to a nice, safe home. So things like smoke detectors in all sleeping quarters and on all floors, carbon monoxide detectors, the furnace needs to be certified. There's no carbon monoxide emissions coming out of it. Handrails safe and secure, varying things like this. There's much more to it than that, but it's all pretty basic maintenance, and it's doable.
Okay, I have to just, a quick story, just because I'm thinking of it. Carbon monoxide detectors, and if you're listening right now, I hope in your head you're thinking, do I have one of those or do I not? I have a friend who just this past winter did not have one in her house. And the entire family ended up in emergency, and they are all okay, but it was significant. And the signs and symptoms they were showing were like flu-like symptoms. And she told me the story, and I want to tell everybody, make sure you have a carbon monoxide detector.
And check your furnace.
And it doesn't matter if the furnace is old or new, because we've had furnaces fail and or have problems within 3 or 4 years.
And
so it doesn't matter.
We check them prior to the heating season for carbon monoxide emissions. We have a local heating and cooling contractor that we regularly use for this, and does a great job.
It's just as important as a fire alarm. Everyone's got those in their house, but nobody thinks about the carbon monoxide, and that is critical, because you can't smell it. You don't know that it's in the home. Mm-hmm. It is completely, like, scary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, keep going. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that's important for everyone to know.
Yeah, so, and assuming that they you know, come to know, like, and trust us, then at that point we would extend a management agreement to them. And people are probably going to want to know, well, what's this going to cost me? And we have a baseline of 10% of the collected rent. Notice the word collected. If we don't collect the rent, they don't pay us a management fee. So it's incumbent upon Tricia and I to make sure that we're doing diligence on making sure we have a financially qualified applicant that's able to pay the rent, and then we collect the rent. Now, that 10% is adjustable if they have multiple properties Or, for instance, we have a property in a pretty affluent community here that's a 23-room mansion that we're renting out for the next 48 months.
That sounds like fun.
$7,000 a month rent. And obviously, we don't charge 10% of that.
Okay. So the higher the rent, if the rents are higher, then the percentage comes down.
So we make it make financial sense. Like that's undergirding the whole philosophy. Does it make financial sense to do this? And so we explore that at that meeting.
Okay. And we also explore what they need to do. We figure out how much money do they need to put into the house to make it marketable or code. And obviously you have to figure out, do they have the money to do that, to prep it? So that's part of the equation as well.
Okay. And so this whole process is free of charge, like you said, the assessment, and then you look at the house and share information. And then when they make the decision to go into the rental, you actually go out and find the people.
Oh, yes.
And you vet them.
Yes.
And you collect the money. So really, they don't do a whole lot after they say, yes, we want to use you too.
No, and I just want to talk a little bit more about that interview. We've talked about somebody's lived in the house 30, 40, 50 years, the house might be free and clear. But there is the possibility that a mortgage could be on the house. They're certainly going to have insurance and tax expenditures. If it's a condo, they're going to have an association fee. Adding a management fee to that too may make it such that it's not positive cash flow situation. It could be just break even, which negates the whole point. Mm-hmm. So we would make sure that that works. Then the other side of the equation is it could be negative cash flow because you have to fund for capital improvements like how long is the hot water tank going to last? They usually have a usable life of 15 to 20 years. You need to fund for that because if you're making $50 a month positive cash flow month over month on a rental property and at the end of the year the hot water tank goes, what did you really make?
Right.
So we really get down into the numbers, crunch the numbers to make sure that it makes financial sense.
Yeah. One more question. How long do people usually sign a lease for? A year, 2 years, 5 years?
It's minimum 1 year. But we do get people in this market, if they don't want to move, they ask for a 2 or 3. So we do have a number that did sign on at 2 or 3. And then when that time frame starts coming to an end, we get in touch with them a couple months beforehand and ask, do they want to continue? Do they want to extend? And then when we extend, we look at the market again and see how much we think
we can raise the rent,
of course.
Over the years, though, we have trailed the market a little bit to make it for people that are living in the home kind of a little bit of a reward for them being there and being faithful and loyal.
Well, it's always better in the long run to not have vacancy. So even if I put something on the market that if I put it on today and I could get $75 more for it, well, that's great. But if I increase the rent $75 and that makes that person move and I end up with 2 months of vacancy,
right.
It wasn't worth it. So it's better just to increase it $20 and have them know that they can stay there.
What is the average increase? Like, do they do like 10% or what's the, do they?
You know, people do different things. Sometimes they do $20, $30. Sometimes they do 1% or different companies just have different formulas on how they do that, really. The other convenient thing that we didn't really get into yet is our online resident portals. People pay their rent online very easily. It doesn't really matter where you are. I don't even have to send a check to you. I can just get your bank account information and every month you just get a direct deposit from us and you get a report in the email that states how much the income was, the rent minus whatever expenses, and here's what went in your bank account. So a lot of times with the elderly, sometimes it's the kids who are actually getting the report. We send them and they also get an email saying this much money has been deposited into your account.
So there's no meet me, I'll give you your
nope.
check and
nope.
blah, blah, blah. Yeah,
very
I like
easy.
That. Mm-hmm. I like that. And that's this day and age, that's where we're all at,
exactly.
Really. So we've got 2 minutes left of the program. Is there a takeaway that each of you can share that you think is the most important thing for our listeners to remember about today's program if they're just tuning in?
Certainly. Well, I would like to say you can, again, call us at 248-658-8518. But we also have a website for your convenience. Tricia mentioned that. We actually call it a property portal. It's realty.mobi, Mary Oscar Baseball Idaho, the first four letters of mobile. And that TMIRealty.mobi reflects our philosophy. It's a minimalist website. And if you think about some of the popular search engines, you go to those search engines, there's a box where you can type in some words of what you're searching for, and there's a button where you can click. And you know there's a lot going on behind the scenes of that website that brings you that information. So when you go to TMIRealty.mobi, you will find that is the first opening portal to our online in-the-cloud systems that are very convenient for both residents and owners alike. And there's a lot going on behind the scenes. And the only way you'll find out is if you connect with us.
Did you have something to add to that, Tricia? Are you good?
I appreciate Mark staying on top of our system so well. His greatest talent is communicating with the owners and with the residents. He does a great job with that. In fact, usually when we hear people who are upset with their property managers, it's because they never hear from them.
And that's not the case with you
guys.
They
definitely hear from Mark. He writes them great communications.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, both of you. We appreciate you so much. You're listening to Next Steps for Seniors, where we take you through the process of the next steps with an aging parent or loved one. Please tune in next week, Saturday at 11, when we'll be talking about CBD. And if you don't know what that is, you want to know. You're listening to The Patriot, FM 101.5, AM 1400.
You've been listening to this week's edition of Next Steps for Seniors with your host, Wendy Jones. You can reach Wendy with any questions you have at area 248-651-5010. That's 248-651-5010. Join us again next week as Wendy provides more information and resources for those important next steps for your elderly parent or loved one.